Let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
This is Patriots Playbook.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the seven route.
Patriots Playbook, breaking down last Sunday's game.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
Next Sunday's game.
Want to go odd. 5,
Patriots Playbook.
51 mirror.
And the rest of the 2007 NFL season.
Sack, guts, combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
And some of the fun stuff in between.
Even. 51 grapes. Even. 51 grapes.
And now... he's John Rook.
Come on, let's go.
Kind of just dawned on me there for a second. Maybe, well, I don't know, it is still sort of the 2007 season. Should we change that to 2008 off the top of the show now? Oh, I don't know, just kind of wondering anyway. We welcome you inside Patriots Playbook here for a Thursday. John Rook with you. And again, apologize for the telephone reception here. But we are broadcasting or coming to you from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Yes, indeed. Milwaukee, Wisconsin today, where we're doing some college basketball work tonight. Providence Marquette game. So it's just, hey, a hell of a start to the new year, isn't it? All the way around. Couple of things on the agenda today. We will hear Bill Belichick's news conference from earlier today at Gillette Stadium. We'll have that for you coming up in a little bit. And in hour number two of the program, as he normally does on Thursdays, Russell Baxter from ESPN, our NFL research coordinator, he will join us to look at the wild card matchups for this weekend and who might be the likely Patriots opponent, at least from the ESPN point of view. So that's coming up in hour number two of the program. And we've got plenty of interviews from inside of the locker room for you today. So all that kind of stuff is upcoming on the program here inside the playbook. Now, right off the top here, email question of the day. I'm thinking, you know, didn't really give you an opportunity to think yesterday. You know, we talked about who you think actually the Patriots might play. So what I'd like for you to do today, since the PFW guys were talking about it right before coming on the program this afternoon, giving their picks as to the wild card games this weekend. So what I'd like for you to do is predict the wild card games this weekend. Inevitably, you're going to get a chance now to back up who you liked and who you thought in particular. We'll reach the game against the Patriots coming up on the 12th. So webradio@patriots.com, webradio@patriots.com, the email address. Fire off a note here and let me know who you think will win the wild card games. If you want to predict the NFC games as well, that's certainly all right, even though it won't have a whole lot of a bearing, I don't think, on what the Patriots will have. But if you'd like to go ahead and predict all four of the wild card games this weekend, please go ahead and do so, and let's see who comes out on top. But definitely take a look at the two AFC games so we can get a bit of a bearing on how you think these games will turn out this weekend and who is most likely to be facing the Patriots coming up on the 12th of this month. So that's the email topic right off the bat. Now, a couple of stories that I've seen on the internet and a couple of newspaper services as well, wire services as well, over the last 24 hours that I wanted to discuss with you today. I don't know if anybody has seen it or not, but FoxSports.com basically handicapped. They thought who were the teams most likely to contend with the Patriots for the Super Bowl. And they have the Patriots obviously up at the top of the list. In fact, they have the Patriots at even odds, 1-1, if you will, to win the Super Bowl, which shouldn't come as a tremendous surprise to you or to anybody else. But what they did then is they also handicapped the other teams in the NFL on their likelihood to win the Super Bowl. Not so much going up and beating the Patriots, but their likelihood to win the Super Bowl. So it's a little bit of a different perspective in terms of contenders, if you will, in the NFL. They're pretty much, you know, given it to the Patriots, and because the Patriots obviously, you know, in fact, here, they say the playoffs are a different story. Single elimination tournament, a bad call or a bad break could wreck the Patriots' fortunes, but they remain the best team, plus all their playoff games will be at home, so if they make it to Phoenix, the weather and the playing surface should be conducive to their bombs away offense, which is why, obviously, they have the Patriots up at the top of the list. But as far as the other contenders are concerned, this is how they handicap the entire 12-team, if you will, NFL tournament, which will start with wild card games this weekend. And I just kind of thought this was interesting reading. I don't know that any of it's going to come as a surprise. There was one team in particular, One team in particular that I thought was a little bit of a surprise, and I'll share that with you here in a moment, but obviously the top contender they have here, well, you know what, let's start from the bottom. Let's do things a little bit differently here. Why not? We'll go from the bottom up. And right at the bottom of the list here is they have the Tennessee Titans at 150-1. Now, I can't imagine that anybody's terribly surprised that Tennessee is the least favorite of all, although I might have thought about Washington. Especially since the Patriots have already played Washington and beaten them handily during the regular season. But like I said, this isn't so much a comparison with the Patriots as to it is who they really think has an opportunity to win the Super Bowl, regardless of who's there. But so they have the Tennessee Titans at 150-1. They say the Titans backed into the playoffs. And as much as they respect Coach Jeff Fisher and know his team would be prepared, that he says that there's no confidence in Vince Young to play the game of his life, and that's what it would take to upset New England in particular. So they have Tennessee at 150-1. Pittsburgh is actually at 100-1. 100-1. And this is the one that really surprised me. Thought maybe Pittsburgh would be a little bit better odds than that. But the reasoning by Fox Sports is that the Steelers should get eliminated this Saturday night. They lost to Jacksonville last time with Willie Parker, who was leading the NFL in rushing at the time. Steelers don't have the offensive line anymore to mash the Patriots. Ben Roethlisberger definitely doesn't have enough protection to pass all over, so Pittsburgh has no shot. So Pittsburgh at 100-1. They have the Redskins at 75-1. Redskins at 75-1. They have Seattle also at 75-1. Then it gets a little bit more realistic. The Giants are listed at 30-1, again by FoxSports.com. It says here, as difficult as it is to forget last Saturday's masterpiece in the Meadowlands, the Giants would never win a rematch with the Patriots. They gave it their best shot already. New England definitely wouldn't take them lightly. One thing to consider is that closing out a 16-0 season isn't the same magnitude as winning a Super Bowl. But if this matchup happens, New England, New York, New England will win, and it won't be close. Also listed at 30-1 will be Tampa Bay. It says the Bucs here would have to shock the world if they ended up in Phoenix, and John Gruden would have a game plan for the Patriots, but the Bucs are too young on defense and maybe too old at quarterback to really be a factor. Green Bay is listed at 20-1 to win it all. Packers have closed the gap on the Cowboys from their earlier meeting. A Green Bay-New England Super Bowl would be every cheesehead's favorite. Brett Favre versus Tom Brady, a billboard special. The Packers' cornerbacks could press New England's receivers and maybe cause some concern for Moss and Welker. But overall, Green Bay doesn't have the arsenal. Jacksonville. Now we get into the real favorites. Jacksonville is listed at 12-1. The Jaguars are the current flavor of the month. Their physical style, both on offense and defense, definitely would pose problems for the Patriots. There's no doubt that they would demolish Pittsburgh for the second time in 21 days this weekend. And then it says here they will earn themselves a playoff date with the Patriots. They have them as 12-1 overall to win the Super Bowl. Dallas is listed at 10-1. Says here, a month ago, this was the Super Bowl everyone was looking forward to, but the Cowboys have slipped a little on offense down the stretch. They failed to score a touchdown in losses to Philadelphia and Washington. Of course, they mailed it in basically against Washington anyway, as I think we all know. And then there's the big Terrell Owens question. Will he recover from a high ankle sprain? If Dallas wins the NFC, you can bet that Wade Phillips will install a couple of defensive wrinkles that Brady hasn't seen. And with 2 weeks to prepare, the Cowboys might be able to slow down the NFL's highest scoring offense ever. But it says here the Dallas offense, it's been in second gear for a while, and says here that Cowboys coaches aren't sure they could have beaten the Redskins last Sunday even if they weren't resting some guys. So the Cowboys are listed as 10-1 as the third favorite. San Diego is the second favorite, and they're listed at 8-1. Chargers are finally beginning to play well. If nose tackle Jamal Williams can clog the middle like he used to, it would allow Sean Merriman and Sean Phillips to create havoc on the outside. Chargers should have an easier time with Tennessee, and then they would have to travel to beat the Colts. Well, that's something that they've done before. And they actually match up well against Indy, especially if they can get a lead. The thinking is that they beat the Colts, they will be sky high for a trip to New England. Patriots upset the Chargers in last year's playoffs, so there's a score to settle. And you can bet LaDainian Tomlinson wants a second chance. Is thinking that LT would be a man possessed this time around. Sounds to me like San Diego might be the sleeper pick here, according to Fox. And of course, as the as the chief favorite, other than New England for the Super Bowl, they have Indianapolis listed at 4-1. As the Colts had the Patriots right where they wanted them back in Week 9, but Reggie Wayne dropped a potential touchdown. Peyton Manning misfired on his next possession. Indy was up 10 and blew it. Colts couldn't contain Welker in the fourth quarter. And that was the difference. So anyway, I thought that was kind of interesting. Interesting meeting. Patriots are even money favorites to win. The Colts at 4-1. The Chargers next at 8-1. If you've got some thoughts on that, I'd love to hear from you again at webradio@patriots.com. If you have some thoughts on how they've seeded the tournament in terms of the odds on favorites to win it all in the Super Bowl. The other interesting thing, a bit of reading that I came across in the last day, came from the folks at Scouts, Inc. They do a lot of the research for ESPN and ESPN.com. And from time to time, I'm privy to some of their musings on the Internet, and they actually published this one, although you had to do a little bit of digging to find it. But what they did is they came up with an analyzing of every team in every season in this decade, from 2000 to 2007. To see how strengths and weaknesses translated to what they say playoff performance. In other words, if you were a strong run team or you were a strong defensive team, well, how far did your team advance in the playoffs? Does, in other words, defense win championships? Do you need to have a running game in order to win in December and January? Those kinds of typical things that we all assume to an extent to be true. Well, Scouts, Inc. did this research for ESPN.com and says here the goal was to project which teams might enjoy playoff success this year based upon characteristics evident during the regular season. So what they did is they measured each of the 254 teams during 2000 to 2007 in 36 statistical categories. This is going to make stat heads just go crazy here, right? These are all categories that are tracked by the league, 18 on each side of the ball, 18 offense, 18 defense. The statistical analysis revealed which categories correlated most strongly to regular season victory totals. Then they noted how many playoff games pre-2007 teams won and which teams won and lost Super Bowls. They said no single factor determines whether teams win playoff games and Super Bowls. There was not one thing that you could, you know, bet the house on and say, that one factor will win you a Super Bowl. There are a lot of tendencies and trends, but no one single factor determines whether a team wins a playoff game or ultimately wins a championship. The whole reasoning here is that some tend to be more important than others, but there is no one single factor. So considering all this extensive research that they've done, let me kind of skim over this because I don't want, you know, it's it is extensive here. But their findings were, number one, conventional wisdom that defense wins championships. And Scouts Inc. says that's true. Scoring defense is far more important than yardage-related indicators. The 30 teams that allowed the fewest regular season points since 2001 at 38 playoff games and appeared in 8 Super Bowls, winning 5 of them. None of the 35 remaining statistical categories, including point differential per game, included such telling results. Only the Colts since 2000, only last year's Colts won a Super Bowl after allowing more than 17 points per game during the regular season. They allowed 22.5, but once we know Bob Sanders improved, once we know Bob Sanders got back to the lineup, well, the defense improved remarkably during the playoff run. I think that was certainly one of the stories of last year's playoffs. The Colts allowed only 16.4 points per game this season, so almost a touchdown less than what they gave up a year ago, and that was the fewest in the league. Pittsburgh was next at 16.8. Tampa was third at 16.9. The Patriots were fourth at 17.1. But, of course, the Patriots, we all know, have built their reputation on offense this year rather than defense. The other interesting stat here is that, again, since 2000, only one team has won a Super Bowl after allowing more than 17 points per game. Colts last year. Well, the Patriots, just a fraction but a fraction, nevertheless, more than 17 points per game this year defensively. Thought that was kind of interesting. All right, conventional wisdom number two here. Home field advantage means everything. Scouts Inc. says false. Road teams won three-fourths of wild card playoff games following the 2004 and 2005 seasons. 2 years ago, Steelers kept winning on the road right through Super Bowl 40 in Detroit, where, of course, the pro-Pittsburgh crowd cheered them on to win over Seattle. Baltimore won two road playoff games before beating the Giants in the Super Bowl in 2000. Of course, the Patriots, in 2001, they won the AFC title game in Pittsburgh. After that, Tampa Bay won the NFC title game in Philly. Home teams have won 20 of 28 divisional round games since 2000. So that might bode well for the Patriots in their first game this year. But one home team lost in a conference championship round for six consecutive seasons until Chicago and Indy won at home last year. Interesting. So home field advantage doesn't necessarily mean everything. All right, here's an interesting item. Conventional wisdom number three. Teams must run the ball and stop the run. And we've had a lot of conversation about this over the course of this season. If you've been a frequent guest to this program and listened in quite a bit, you know that this has certainly been a topic of conversation. And the answer here is false. Running the ball and stopping the opponent's run is always a good idea, but for unknown reasons, teams that have done so most convincingly have not gone very far. 15 teams since 2000 have rushed for more than 140 yards per game on offense while holding opponents below 100 per game. Out of those teams, the 2005 Seattle Seahawks were the only one to win more than one playoff game. The others, including non-playoff teams like the current Minnesota Vikings, combined to win five. So 30 teams since 2000 have outrushed their opponents by at least 40 yards per game, not counting the Vikings, Jaguars, and Steelers this season. Those teams won 22 playoff games and went 2-2 in Super Bowls. Now, it's not bad, but the indicators produced similar results, a lot of them. In other words, the 30 highest-scoring teams over the same period won 23 playoff games. So possessing the NFL rushing champ doesn't mean much come playoff time. No NFL rushing champ since Denver's Terrell Davis in 98 has won a Super Bowl the same season, obviously. So that means that doesn't bode very well, I would think, for LaDainian Tomlinson in San Diego. He's going to try to break the streak, obviously, this year. But, of course, the Chargers haven't won a playoff game in more than a decade. Five teams since 2000 have gained more yards rushing than passing during the season. Three won at least 10 regular season games, but only the Falcons in 2004 won a playoff game, and they were one and done. So rushing and stopping the rush, well, it's a good idea, but it's not conducive to winning championships. Okay, number four, conventional wisdom. Balanced offenses always have an advantage. And the verdict on that one is false. Again, balanced teams generally aren't proficient through the air, but even teams with highly productive passing and running games have struggled to win in the playoffs. So balance doesn't necessarily mean everything. The Eagles are the only team this season to average more than 230 yards passing and 120 yards rushing per game, and what do? They finished 8-8. They were the most balanced team, really, in the entire NFL when you look at the overall statistical numbers, and they finished 8-8. 15 other teams have hit those averages that the Eagles did since 2000. Eight finished the regular season with double-digit wins, but out of those 15 teams, they won only five playoff games. And only one in that group, the 0-1 St. Louis Rams, reached the Super Bowl, which, of course, they lost to the Patriots. The least balanced offenses also have not done much better. This is sort of a statistical anomaly here, I guess. The current season produced five of the 17 largest pass rush yardage imbalances since 2000. And the other least balanced teams went 0-2 in Super Bowls, winning nine playoff games. I'm not sure what that says about this year. Conventional wisdom, number five. Super Bowl teams usually have franchise quarterbacks. Now, what do you think about this one? True or false? Well, the answer is true. Plenty of teams have won championships with what they call caretakers at quarterback, but not so much lately. You got Brady, Ben Roethlisberger, Manning, they've won 5 of 7 Super Bowls this decade. This season, top 2 seeds in each conference feature quarterbacks with, you know, big-dollar contracts. And it includes Tony Romo with the Dallas Cowboys, even though he has yet to win a playoff game. Only Trent Dilfer at Baltimore and Brad Johnson at Tampa won Super Bowls during their relatively short times with their teams against this trend. So generally speaking, Super Bowl teams do usually have what they call franchise quarterbacks. All right, a couple of more here. Momentum is crucial heading into the playoffs. True or false? Well, it says here, there is no answer. Home playoff teams have enjoyed the most success in the divisional round after having a bye week to rest. The time off presumably would hurt a team's momentum, but not enough apparently to offset the apparent advantage of extra time. The best teams tend to win no matter the time of year. Recent Super Bowl winners often finish the regular season strong. Two teams have won Super Bowl since 2000 without finishing strong. The 0-2 Bucks lost in weeks 13 and 16. And, of course, the Colts last year lost 4 of their last 7 before turning on the switch in the playoffs. So there is no real answer to that. You would think it would tend to mean good things, but not necessarily. All right, here we go. Anything can happen in the playoffs. The answer to that is definitely true. Steelers won a Super Bowl as the AFC's number 6 seed 2 years ago. They defeated top-seeded Seattle in the NFC. In 2003, Carolina took a wild card win into a divisional round upset over a 12-win Rams team that averaged 28 points per game. Of course, we know the 2001 Patriots were a Cinderella story, to say the least. So you'd have to say that anything can indeed happen in the playoffs, which certainly adds to the spice and the intrigue of the extra season here. Special teams are 1/3 of the game. In other words, they carry as much weight as offense and defense production. The answer here is false. Chicago's Devin Hester returned the opening kickoff for a touchdown last year in the Super Bowl, only to watch Indy blow his team out from right there. The 72 Redskins blocked a kick in the Super Bowl, but Miami won the game. We remember Buffalo's last-second Super Bowl miss against the Giants because it was dramatic, and, of course, it was unusual. The 15 highest-rated special team units from 2002 to 2006 won anywhere from 2 to 13 regular-season games, but only 5 of the top 23 appeared in Super Bowls. So offense and defense matter more from play to play than do special teams. So the conclusion, according to Scouts, Inc., in terms of trends and whether or not you can figure out really if one team has an edge over another or whether or not, you know, you have to run the football in the wintertime in order to be successful in the playoffs and those kind of things, the conclusion here is that teams exceptionally strong in specific areas can sometimes win championships in spite of shortcomings that might derail others. In other words, if you've got something that's prolific going for you, it's best to continue playing that card. For instance, defensive dominance carried the Ravens in 2000. New England's passing game this year has been prolific, right? Well, why change from that? Why depend on the run when the passing game has gotten you where it's gotten you? And I think according to these numbers, and according to these trends and statistics, the Patriots would be best served to basically go try to win a championship with what has gotten them to this point in time. So defense has won its share of championships, but the Patriots really have not had to bother with such details thus far. They've been scoring right around 37 points per game. So it may very well be that the Patriots are doing exactly what the Colts did last year, just doing at a completely different level. Anyway, I thought the reading was kind of interesting, and I wanted to share those numbers with you because we're all sitting here trying to figure out not only, A, who the Patriots are going to play coming up on the 12th, but really, who is likely to knock the Patriots off? If anybody, who's going to do it? I think that has to be the X factor. That has to be the question that is probably hidden in the back of everyone's subconscious here as you kind of look at the NFL playoff derby. And, of course, all of the other 11 teams in the postseason, they're all trying to figure out a way, well, hey, what can we do to exploit the Patriots? How can we beat the Patriots? How can we learn from maybe what the Giants did and what the Ravens did and what the Eagles did in particular? You know, do we have a shot? Is this really a mail-it-in type of tournament? You know, are the Patriots a foregone conclusion to win it all? Well, that's why, you know, because we're all trying to figure these things out at this point in time, that's why some of the intrigue, you know, comes in from a lot of the trends and a lot of the statistical stories that we've seen win championships over the course of the last 6-7 years since 2000. And I think we all realize since 2000, I think the game overall has changed, well, not dramatically, but it has changed. And some of the conventional wisdom is getting pushed aside because of this different era in which we're in. Offense is starting to mean more. But that doesn't mean that defense won't eventually catch up with what offenses are doing right now. And the Patriots, for them, as we've mentioned many times on this program before this year, the Patriots have what is best really, I think, described as a perfect storm on offense. You have a team that has specific talents and has hit its stride, and certainly seems to have enough emotion, if not, desire on their side in an effort to produce extraordinary results. And so if you've got that, well, then by all means, you got to kind of continue to play that card. To change gears right now could, it could prove fatal in the playoffs. webradio@patriots.com is the email address. Again, we're coming to you today from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, where we've got some college basketball duties again tonight, but we're glad you took the time to tune in to us here on patriots.com radio. Coming up in the program, we're going to get a timeout in here, and then coming up, we'll get to some emails, and then we'll hear from Patriots head coach Bill Belichick from earlier today at Gillette Stadium, as the Patriots are back to work and beginning the preparations for the divisional round of the playoffs next week. More Inside the Playbook in just a moment.
He's been a three-time champion, two-time Super Bowl MVP, and kicked off 2007 on a record pace.
Three touchdown passes in the first half.
Now, Tom Brady has signed official Patriots mini replica helmets, and you can get one free. Exclusively from the New England Patriots, this authentic mini helmet comes complete with chin strap, face mask, and Tom Brady's autograph. Perfect for every Patriots fan. To take advantage of this incredible one-of-a-kind offer, all you need to do is make qualifying transactions on your Bank of America Patriots Extra Points Visa card. Plus, with your card, you'll earn Patriots extra points redeemable for once-in-a-lifetime Patriots experiences, pregame field passes, memorabilia, merchandise, tickets, and much more. Don't wait. Apply at PatriotsExtraPoints.com or call 1-800-NFL-9929 to get your Bank of America Patriots extra points Visa card and a free official mini replica helmet autographed by Tom Brady. Patriots extra points, because fans want contact too. Autographed mini helmet limited to those making a qualifying purchase. See details at Patriots ExtraPoints.com.
All right, Jimmy, it's the big day, and we gotta go. Patriots kick off in an hour. Let's make sure we got everything.
All right, let's see. Face paint.
Check.
Helmets.
Check.
Foam fingers.
Check.
Jerseys.
Check.
Checks.
Check.
Check card.
Check.
That's everything.
Let's go, Pats!
Woo!
Let's go, Pats! Let's go, Pats! Let's go!
Check, check, check. That's right. If you really are a true Patriots fan, then you need to open a New England Patriots checking account from Bank of America today. You'll get checks, check cards, and even bank statements, all with the official New England Patriots logo. Bank of America is the official bank of the New England Patriots. So take advantage of this opportunity to make every day game day.
Let's go, Pats!
Woo!
And sign up for a New England Patriots checking account today. Bank of America. Bank of Opportunity.
Bank of America N.A. Member FDIC. New England Patriots trademarks, including the Patriots logo, are the property of New England Patriots L.P. and are used pursuant to a licensing agreement with New England Patriots L.P. 2007 Bank of America Corporation. All rights reserved.
Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of three flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
when you've got a lineman-sized hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, First Down Franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers, Mile and Hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, First Down Franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's, and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine, and Associate Grocers of New England, and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
Welcome back inside Patriots Playbook for a Thursday. Of course, it's the bye week for the Patriots in the playoff round, and they will open up with divisional play next Saturday night at 8 o'clock Eastern Time against the lowest remaining seed in the AFC playoffs. I'm John Rook, again coming from Milwaukee today. And we have breaking news to tell you about in the world of pro football. Gary, do we have any breaking news music we can play here? Anything that we can do for breaking news, news bulletins, news alerts? Okay. This doesn't really have a real beat to it now, does it? We can tell you that Bill Belichick has been named the Associated Press 2007 NFL Coach of the Year. And just coming down from the AP, so the undefeated season now has begotten another achievement. First coach since Don Shula, of course, in 1972 to lead his team to a spotless regular season. Yeah, the Associated Press tells us that Belichick wins the award for the second time in 4 years. Of course, the Patriots went 14-2 in 2003. They won their final 12 games that year, and Belichick won the award in 03. But this time, of course, the team went right through on the regular season at 16-0. So apparently, the season, 16-0, was more than enough to offset the blemish on the resume. Of course, that's the $500,000 personal fine and the $250,000 team fine for the team and the loss of the first-round pick in the draft upcoming in April after the Patriots were caught in the whole Spygate incident back earlier after week one in the NFL season. The Associated Press says that Spygate did not stop 29 of the 50 voters on a nationwide panel of media members who cover the NFL from voting for Belichick. How about that? In a season highlighted by several strong coaching performances, Belichick beat out Green Bay's Mike McCarthy. He received 15 votes to come in second place for leading the Packers to a 13-3 record in the NFC North Championship. Also receiving votes were Dallas's Wade Phillips, Jacksonville's Jack Del Rio, Indianapolis's Tony Dungy, and Tampa Bay's John Gruden. So there you go. The only other Patriots coach, by the way, to win the award, AP Coach of the Year, was Bill Parcells in 1994. And all he did was fire his head coach of Miami today in Cam Cameron. So I don't know if you're surprised or not. Maybe you're pleasantly so. I don't know if you thought that maybe Spygate might cause members of the media to think differently about Bill Belichick. But he has been named the Associated Press NFL Coach of the Year. And he met with members of the Patriots media at Gillette Stadium a little while ago.
Happy New Year, everyone. We're definitely in one, and you know, it's a privilege, of course, to be involved in the second season here in the NFL, and the new one where everybody's undefeated, and we're all starting at the bottom. So we, you know, we're going to take these couple days and try to emphasize and work on the team that's most important, and that's our team, and do the best we can to try to improve our situation heading into next week. We know that whoever we play is an outstanding team, whoever that'll be, and it'll be tough, and we'll have to be at our best. So that's what we want to try to do, is get our game to the highest level we can, work on things that we need to work on regardless of who we play. There's certainly a lot of generic and fundamental things that we can improve on, and that's what we'll try to put our emphasis. And then once we know who we're playing, then certainly turn it all toward that opponent. So that's that's kind of where we're at for this week.
I know we've covered this before over the years, but when you're in a situation where you really don't know the opponent, how much time do you really have to spend on preparing for all of them at this stage of preparation?
Well, we have people on our staff that do the advanced work like they always do, and that's what we're doing. We're just doing more teams than we usually do, but some we have different degrees of familiarity with. We've seen them all within the last roughly calendar year, so... but main thing right now, like I said, is rather than spend a lot of time on all three teams and wasting it on two of them, that we'll spend time on our team, which are there are a lot of things we need to do and try to work on that. And then once we know who it is, we'll have a better idea Saturday night, and then we'll, won't know for sure until Sunday.
Bill, how much of a luxury is it to have these 2 days to work on things that you need to work on again? Are there one or two things specifically that you've seen develop over the last few weeks that you know definitely need work on going into the playoffs?
Well, I think we can sharpen up our game in all the areas. So there are certainly plenty of things for us to do the next couple of days in all three phases of the game, running game, passing game, you know, you name it, fundamentals. So well, there are a lot of different bases to cover. And it's an opportunity for us to work on those things without being opponent specific. And as soon as we know who the opponent is, then we'll turn to that. So hopefully we'll be able to get some benefit out of these days and improve our team. That's what we're going to try to do.
Bill, when you look at the season as a whole, it seems like there's been a change in complexion of the games, the way the games have turned out. At the beginning of the year, obviously, there are a lot of blowouts. But at the end of the year, you guys were in the midst of a lot of really tight games. Why do you think that is?
I don't know. That's the NFL. That's most of the games are that way. But that really, we're not all that concerned about any specific game, or we're just trying to look to improve our team and get better the next few days here and move on to whatever the next challenge is. So I think the analysis and all that of the season is take it with a grain of salt. We look at the things we need to do better and try to formulate our best and strongest team going forward. So that's where we're at.
Bill, will Josh be interviewing with Atlanta and Boston on Saturday?
Yeah, I wouldn't. I don't have any comment on any other team's situation. And any comment on that would have to come from any people that are involved on our end would come from them.
Granted permission.
So that's all I got to say, Karen. Sure, you have a lot more questions on it, but really, I don't have anything to add.
Bill, the first of these two games that are played for you on Saturday night at 8 o'clock, will you come in here to watch that? Or how do you watch that?
Yeah, I don't know. But I'll definitely watch it. So, that game will have. That could be one of the teams, so I'll definitely watch it.
But you don't know if you'll come into the office to watch it or?
No.
Like go to a sports bar? Or
yeah. That's kind of what I was thinking. Maybe hit a couple of them, first half, second half. Get a different flavor for it.
I mean, is it the kind of thing where you watch it with staff? Or, do you just wait for the film? Can you get
off that first game? Yeah, I'm not real big on TV scouting. It's hard to see the game from the coaching standpoint the way we need to see it. But it's interesting to see how it goes. Certainly, it's the AFC playoffs, so we're interested in that. But we'll wait till we get the game tapes in and break those down rather than try to break it down off TV.
Will the players have Saturday and Sunday off?
We'll give you that schedule probably tomorrow. That takes some of the thrill out of it for them if they got it from you. So.
Well, how's this week different? Because it's the first time in a long time you haven't prepared for one team. So how's this week different for you than any other week?
We're working on us. Yeah, we're working on the Patriots.
Does that mean more fundamentals? Or?
It means everything. There's a lot of things we have to work on, and we'll... address them in a priority and in a in a structure that we feel like is most beneficial for us over the next 2 days. So.
Bill, could you just talk about Kevin Falk? It seems he, especially the game the other night, whenever Tom needed a big third down pass, he was, you know, Kevin was there and getting the yardage that he needed.
Well, Kevin's done a great job for us through the years. He's been one of our most consistent, dependable players. He has set so many roles, special teams, pass protection, running the ball, catching it, third downs, other downs. He's been a downfield receiver, third down receiver, screens, draws, those kind of plays. So he's done a good job for us. Hardworking kid. I think he's one of the most respected players on the team. Elected a captain this year by his teammates. So I think that speaks a lot to Kevin right there. Even though, you know, he's not a, you know, one of the highest playtime players, I think he's, when he's in there, he's very productive and he's one of the most respected players, coaches, staff, organizationally. You know, he's a terrific kid, great team player, got a great attitude, works hard, performs well.
You spoke to him earlier. He said that if he wasn't playing football, he'd probably be coaching it. You think he'd be a good coach?
I'm sure he would.
Anything about him that's a player that
smart, works hard, very instinctive, has a good feel for the game, has a very good background, does a lot of different things. So I think he's well versed in the passing game, the running game, special teams, training. He's involved in everything. He does a good job in all those areas. So I'm sure he would. I think Brandon's made good progress. It's like any rookie. I mean, he comes in and there's a lot. I mean, there's a different level in the game between college and pro football, and then there's a new system to learn and new terminology and facing different offenses and different opponents and that kind of thing. So, you know, Brandon's worked hard, and he's certainly come a long way. You know, he's still got a long way to go, like every rookie, but he's made a lot of progress. I think if he continues to work hard and be attentive and, you know, gain from all the experiences that he has, both in the classroom and on the practice field and the game field, all that, that he can continue to improve. So.
Was his versatility the biggest selling point in your mind?
Well, you know, when you draft a player, you get the total player, you get everything. So that's what we got, and that's why we took him. He is a versatile player, that's one thing, but there's, you know, there are a lot of things he does well that were a reason why we drafted him.
Coach, could you talk a little bit about the offensive line and 21 sacks? You threw the ball almost 600 times this year. That's a pretty impressive ratio there. It seemed like Tom always had a lot of time to throw the ball.
Well, I think as I've said many times, I think the passing game is a total team effort. It's a function of everybody. And the line has an important role in it, as does the quarterback and the receivers and the scheme. And so the ability for the receivers to get open and have the quarterback, give the quarterback somebody to throw to for the line to protect them, for the backs and tight ends and receivers to the degree that they're involved in protections or adjustments. So it's all a part of that. I think that's to have a good passing game, you have to execute at all 11 spots on the field, not just one or two. So certainly the offensive line deserves credit for their role in it, as do the other players for theirs. And it all needs to function together for it to be effective. Can't have one man band.
You've had some injuries, especially on the right side. Guys have stepped in. Is there a common denominator that allows these guys to step in and not speak?
Well, we work all our players in there throughout the course of training camp, practice. I think everybody plays on a regular rotational basis. You never know when that's going to happen. So they've really been in there since day one. You know, all of our receivers, all of our tight ends, all of our backs, and all of our linemen. So I think through the course of practice, they all work together. And if they ever have to, when they do have to play together, then there's hopefully less of a communication gap, and we're able to go out there and function efficiently, no matter what combination of people we have in there. And we play a lot of people anyway. we have different groups and different combinations in there. So I think that, you know, doing it for an extended period of time hopefully helps our communication and our execution.
Bill, Saturday,
what's the sports bar question?
Yeah.
No.
For the, what's the grill? Every time you seem to come in, like, obviously, we've had to report in as an eligible player or receiver. But was he specifically in the game to kind of help Callahan deal with some of the pass rush, maybe chip away at maybe the guy coming on the edge? And
well, we went into the game with two tight ends, and Ben had been out for a little bit. Steven's a little bit newer to the system. So having Wes, Steve, and Ben there gave us three. In a lot of cases, we played two at the same time. So just in order to give ourselves some depth on the formations and those different personnel groupings, we felt like we need to have a third player ready to at least line up in the tight end position or area. So so those are the three guys that did it at one time or another in the game.
So it wasn't necessarily two guys, maybe their pass rush and the need to give another player some help with that?
Well, we used the formations and the plays that we thought were best against the Giants. And as I said, just to give ourselves some depth at those areas, we didn't want to just go into the game with only two players. And then something happened, then we get knocked out of all those formations and all those personnel groupings. We had three for two. So Wes was one of the three.
In your evaluation of how Callahan handled himself against that top side of that?
Well, I mean, our offensive line went up against a very good defensive line. And, they made some plays. We made some plays. But it was competitive. Certainly Strahan and OC and Tuck are three of the better pass rushers in the league, you know, all on the same team. So pretty good.
Kostkowski and Lewis Freefield, though, I mean, Chris Conson was not necessarily one that just went up for these.
He said most all of them all year, as he did last year. So, yeah, I don't think confidence is an issue. Good kicks, but no, I don't think confidence is an issue.
Coach, have you been surprised by Welker's ability to block, especially blocking from Maloney or touchdown?
You know, he's had several of them for us, and that was a good one. That was a good one. That was, you know, a key play. And I thought Lawrence ran that play well by keeping it tight away from Ross, who was actually unblocked. But Wes has had some big blocks all year, the Washington game, some of our wide receiver screens, things like that. So, you know, Wes is a good – he's a complete football player, very unselfish kid, does whatever you ask him to do, whether it's return, block, catch, clear out, whatever it is. So he does a good job at all. He hustles, plays hard. He's physical. He's not a big kid, but he's physical and he's tough.
So it seems like you're more willing to give the ball to Lawrence down the goal line as the season comes. Is that just random occurrences or is that the point?
I don't think it's anything that's specifically been orchestrated or, you know, big time goal or anything. It's kind of worked out that way, but we've always had confidence in him. He's a good runner. He can get tough yards. He can break big plays. He can run inside, can run outside. So I think he's a pretty versatile back. I don't think there's any issue or any problem giving the ball to him really in any situation. I think we all have confidence in him, and he's produced in every situation. So he's had a couple big runs in short yardage. Well, there's no. Whatever play he gets it on, I think everybody's comfortable with him carrying it. Okay.
There's Patriots head coach Bill Belichick, who once again earlier, in just in fact, just a matter of about 10 minutes ago, was named the NFL Coach of the Year by the Associated Press. Webradio@patriots.com is the email address. That's how you reach us here on the program. If you have any thoughts on Coach Belichick getting the award, if you want to pass along your congratulations or whatever you want to comment on, you certainly can do that. Webradio@patriots.com. Our email question of the day also having to do with who you think will win the wild card games this weekend. Predict the four games, if you will. Certainly the two games in the AFC, but if you want to predict all four, as the PFW in Progress guys did immediately before the show, well, then by all means, jump on in. Russell Baxter from ESPN coming up here in about 5 or 10 minutes. Do want to share a couple of emails. So, but first of all, though, a couple of stories, like, you know, you probably already knew this, but just to make sure, a couple of interesting things came about. First of all, Tom Brady late yesterday was named the AFC Player of the Week again. Fifth time this season that Brady's been named the Offensive Player of the Week, of course, for his fourth quarter comeback, if you will, or the win over the Giants past Saturday. The 12th time, by the way, that he's won the AFC Offensive Player of the Week award in his career. The other thing, though, that I wanted to bring up, we don't really talk a lot about the team initiatives sometimes here because obviously there are sales things and things like, you know, they go on here. But this one obviously will benefit the Patriots Charitable Foundation. And I'm sure you've probably seen it if you logged on here, the homepage of the website, and probably wondered what that was all about. But just in case by some chance you missed it, there is a license plate that's commemorating this 16-0 season that is available now up for auction. Bids are being accepted at ProTeamAuctions.com from now through Friday, January the 11th. The proceeds for this New England Patriots license plate, it's basically license plate number 160, signifying, of course, 16-0 for the Patriots. Whoever the winning bidder is for this Massachusetts license plate, the donation will go to the New England Patriots Charitable Foundation. I think it's kind of cool to have New England win in 16-0, so I thought that's kind of neat. And in case you did not know that, click on the story here on the website, bring you up to date on all that stuff. Let's scratch out a couple of emails here before we get off to Russell Baxter in a bit. This one comes from Nirav, who... is from Los Angeles, and he says, John, I was just wondering, who do you think the ideal opponent is to come to New England and give them a tough game? Something tells me it might be San Diego, but I'm really rooting for a route and a rematch of last year's AFC Championship with the Indianapolis Colts. Well, I mentioned yesterday that I personally think that Jacksonville is going to come in here and give the Patriots their toughest game, but I'm still not going to be surprised, even though nobody seems to be thinking they have a snowball's chance in hell. I wouldn't be surprised to see Pittsburgh come in here again. As far as a tough game for the Patriots, if you're really looking for it, I think San Diego is probably pretty accurate. If San Diego beats the Colts in the divisional round, should they get that far, of course, then I'd say that San Diego will come in here plenty juiced and plenty motivated based on what happened to them in the game with the Patriots last year in San Diego. The Patriots did handle them pretty easily way back in week two, but... I don't know. I think that they would probably give them more of a game than the Colts would, at least at this stage, just because of the emotion. I think we all know that emotion plays a great deal into it. So I'll go along with you there, Nirav, and I'll say San Diego as well in that particular instance. A couple of other tidbits here. This one comes from PJD in North Carolina. PFW guys were talking about free agent linebackers and some of the recognizable names that are on the list that might be worth getting. Teddy Lehman from the Detroit Lions, Carlos Dansby from Arizona, Boss Bailey from the Lions, Kavika Mitchell from the Giants, Brendan Iambideo from Chicago, Lance Briggs. I didn't realize he was an unrestricted free agent, but I liked him before this last year and before they agreed to the franchise tag settlement. Frankly, I'd like Briggs a lot in a Patriots uniform. I think he'd work out very well. But from the other names, I'd like Boss Bailey. I'd also think Mitchell does a pretty good job for the Giants. But Bailey's only concern with me is an injury situation. But Bailey would be an interesting choice if the Patriots decide to, because he certainly, I think, still got some youth on his side, if the Patriots decide to go that route to help shore up the linebacking core in the offseason. Okay, Warren sends this email. Playoff time, I agree with the fact that they need to win the Super Bowl in order to have this season completed. I'd like to see the Titans at Foxborough because I think they'll take them apart with ease. Although I don't see them beating the Chargers, but besides them, I think it'll be the Jags. I think the Jags will cause more problems than any of the other three, but they will still beat them. Personally, I think the Pats have one more tough game in them, and that's the Colts in the AFC. All right, very good. Thank you for that. Let's see. This one comes from Reverend Ray. And he says, of the 16 or of the AFC teams in the playoffs, only the Colts and Chargers make me even slightly concerned. Who in the NFC would you want to see in the Super Bowl, presuming we make it there? Well, just because I'm a longtime Cowboys fan, I'd love to see Dallas. I think Dallas would give the Patriots the best game, although I know that there's a certain faction of fans, to be honest with you, that would love to see the Brady versus Favre matchup, thinking I guess there might be a little glamour involved there. But frankly, I think the Patriots dismantle the Packers. If you're looking for a game in the Super Bowl, I think the Cowboys are the only team capable of giving them one. He says, since we're already looking ahead, how about next year's team? I think the roster will look surprisingly different. It's too early to know a whole lot about how the free agent market is going to go, but in regards to the following players, answer starter, non-starter, or gone. Okay, we'll play this game real quick. Eric Alexander, non-starter. Brandon Merriweather, non-starter. Ellis Hobbs, non-starter. Chad Jackson, gone. Heath Evans, non-starter. Troy Brown, gone. Eugene Wilson, wow. Starter. Santi Samuel, gone. Dante Stallworth, gone. Kelly Washington, non-starter. Nick Kazier, starter. David Thomas, non-starter. So, and then this is Tom Brady. Ha ha, very funny, Reverend Ray. Here again, email address webradio@patriots.com. If you have some comments on any of the aforementioned and discussed emails, or if you want to predict the games for this weekend, fire off your thoughts. Let's go. Russell Baxter from ESPN, NFL Research Coordinator, is coming up next, right here inside the playbook.
When you've got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac-A-Tac sausages, first down franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sac-A-Tac sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine and Associate Grocers of New England and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
All right, Jimmy, it's the big day, and we got to go. Patriots kick off in an hour. Let's make sure we got everything.
All right, let's see. Face paint.
Check.
Helmets.
Check.
Foam fingers.
Check.
Jerseys.
Check.
Checks.
Check.
Check card.
Check.
That's everything.
Yeah, let's go, Pats!
Woo!
Let's go, Pats! Let's go, Pats! Let's go!
Check, check, check. That's right. If you really are a true Patriots fan, then you need to open a New England Patriots checking account from Bank of America today. You'll get checks, check cards, and even bank statements, all with the official New England Patriots logo. Bank of America is the official bank of the New England Patriots. So take advantage of this opportunity to make every day game day.
Let's go, Pats!
Woo! And sign up for a New England Patriots checking account today. Bank of America. Bank of Opportunity.
Bank of America N.A. Member FDIC. New England Patriots trademarks, including the Patriots logo, are the property of New England Patriots L.P. and are used pursuant to a licensing agreement with New England Patriots L.P. 2007 Bank of America Corporation. All rights reserved.
He's been a three-time champion, two-time Super Bowl MVP, and kicked off 2007 on a record pace.
Three touchdown passes in the first half.
Now, Tom Brady has signed official Patriots mini replica helmets, and you can get one free. Exclusively from the New England Patriots, this authentic mini helmet comes complete with chin strap, face mask, and Tom Brady's autograph. Perfect for every Patriots fan. To take advantage of this incredible one-of-a-kind offer, all you need to do is make qualifying transactions on your Bank of America Patriots Extra Points Visa card. Plus, with your card, you'll earn Patriots Extra Points redeemable for once-in-a-lifetime Patriots experiences, pregame field passes, memorabilia, merchandise, tickets, and much more. Don't wait. Apply at PatriotsExtraPoints.com or call 1-800-NFL-9929 to get your Bank of America Patriots Extra Points Visa card and a free official mini replica helmet autographed by Tom Brady. Patriots Extra Points, because fans want contact too. Autographed mini helmet limited to those making a qualifying purchase. See details at PatriotsExtraPoints.com.
It's hour number two, Inside Patriots Playbook, here on Patriots.com Radio. I'm John Rook, and again, coming to you today from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, where we have some college basketball duties again tonight. Unfortunately, yeah, you're kind of stuck with the telephone audio here, so I apologize for that over the internet, but hopefully we can make the information worth your while.
Yoo-hoo! Baxter!
See, now, I always look forward to getting that little message in my ear every Thursday. Russell Baxter, NFL Research Coordinator for ESPN, joined us now as he does on Thursdays here inside the Playbook. Russell, Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year too, and Happy Kwanzaa, and
Festivus.
Just remember, Kwanzaa never crashed.
That's right. Do you celebrate Festivus at home?
If it involves food, yes. I'm not sure what we call it, but I ate it, so.
I like that as well.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness. All right, well, so we've got the playoffs here. Yay! The final 12. The tournament is ready to go. In an overall kind of grand view, point of view here, should we even play this, or should we just mail it in and give it to the Patriots?
Well, I've
got
to remember who I'm talking to in terms of what network and so on. And so we could probably do two versions of this.
Yeah.
Or should I say 12 versions of this.
Right, I'm sure.
Hey, I think we have seen, and, you know, the Patriots are right up there as well as, you know, let's not automatically hand it over to the number one seeds in their respective conferences. You know, we'll just throw out some facts here. The last time both number one seeds made it to the Super Bowl same year, 1993.
Right.
Buffalo,
you
and
I discussed that one, I think, a couple of weeks ago.
Right.
Yeah.
8 of the last 10 years, team with the best record in football did not reach the Super Bowl, or did not win the Super Bowl, I should
right.
say.
Right, right.
Okay. Last 3 years in the AFC, the number two Pats, the number six Steelers, the number three Colts, all Super Bowl champions.
Mm-hmm.
So especially in the AFC where it's really been a dogfight to get out of the playoffs. 2 years ago, home field advantage in the playoffs, 4-6. So last year kind of righted itself back at 8-2 and so on. So In the era of parity where you've seen in the last 10 years, three wild cards and the Colts, who also took 20 games to win the Super Bowl, win titles, it has gotten more wide open than ever. Let's keep in mind about the Patriots. Two of their three Super Bowl titles came with road wins in the AFC Championship games at Pittsburgh. So, you know, there's a lot to support. Now, of course, we also haven't had a 16-0 football team as well.
Right.
We've rarely had a defending Super Bowl champion, as in the Colts, have a better record the year after they won the Super Bowl. In fact, it's only the fourth time. So you look at these top two seeds in the AFC alone, and you're pretty stocked.
Mm-hmm.
You look at the teams in the AFC, Jacksonville and San Diego, who have a lot of momentum coming into these playoffs. So would it be easy to just do it and just hand it to the Patriots, and maybe it is inevitable and so on? Possibly. But to quote Chris Berman, that's why they play the games.
That's exactly correct. Before we get back onto the road of the Super Bowl here where the Patriots are concerned, let me just get a quick thought on Bill Parcells getting rid of Cam Cameron today after one season. Does this come as a real surprise to you or maybe anybody else around there?
I doubt it. You know, I think with any other, I'll use the term startup. Anytime you have a startup, you always want to bring in your guys. They brought in Jeff Ireland, who we knew from Dallas, to be the general manager.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure he's going to bring in, you know, I think not only Cam Cameron, but I think the entire staff, maybe save two people, I think, were let go. So the overall house cleaning, which means Dom Capers is on the market, I believe. Don't quote me. I don't know if he was one of the two people, I think, that were kept. But there's some good coaches are going to be floating around out there. And it actually epitomized what goes on in this league. Do you know already, John, we're, 4 days since the season ended?
Right.
And there's already been six changes at offensive coordinator. Okay, be it firings or promotions or yada, yada, yada.
What does that say beyond the obvious?
Who was the team's offensive coordinator, that would count as one of them. But Mike Martz out, Jim Coletto in Detroit. A couple guys who took college jobs, Steve Fairchild and Rick Neuheisel, off to the college ranks now.
Right.
Of course, Brian Billick is a head coach, no longer there in Baltimore as well. So we're less than a week in, and there's been some, it's not spring, but some serious spring cleaning going on already. So
yeah, what do you think that says? What do you think that says beyond the obvious?
Well, I think you have to win. I think there's a lack of patience that goes on. And actually, the last few years, while you've seen, we had a couple years ago, we had 10 head coaching changes. Last year, we had 7. A couple years ago, we only had 3. But it's the coordinators who wind up doing a lot of the moving more than anywhere else. I mean, Cincinnati fired Chuck Bresnahan, defensive coordinator. There's rumors about Rob Ryan being out in Oakland and so on, San Francisco. You know, the coordinator changes have been actually harder to follow than the head coaching changes. But it's not like we haven't been devoid of head coaches. You know, you go back to the start of the 2005 season and then the start of the 2007 season, and 16 of the 32 teams, exactly half, had different head coaches. So it's become a league of win now. Not that it always wasn't that way, but with free agency and the way it goes now and the fact that owners and general managers look at how fast teams can turn around. I mean, if you're in the NFC South, you're the last place team. The next year, you're the division champion. It's happened, I believe, 5 years in a row. So I guess we can mail in Atlanta for next year.
I suppose.
I doubt it, though.
Just about 15, 20 minutes ago that Bill Belichick's been named the Associated Press NFL Coach of the Year. Any mild surprise that he got that award based on all the Spygate discussion?
I don't think it's a surprise. I think the one person who was probably the strongest contender as well was Mike McCarthy up in Green Bay.
And he finished second.
You know, it's hard not to award a guy who's gone 16-0 Coach of the Year. I'm sure there were some people debating on whether to give him the award because of the Spygate and so on. And I looked at the voting, and I think I want to say six coaches, I think, got some votes. Jack Del Rio got a vote or two. Tony Dungy got a vote. You know, it is the Associated Press Award. It's not the coaches themselves who are voting for this. But, you know, it's like Offensive Rookie of the Year was near unanimous as well. I mean, Adrian Peterson, the only other person who got votes was Joe Thomas. And you could have made a really, really strong case for Joe Thomas, considering he was strong from start to finish. Adrian a little banged up and kind of wilted a little down the stretch. So
Right. Well, I think it was a culmination, obviously, of coming right down to the fact that nobody's gone 16-0 before in this day and age in the 16-game schedule. So it was kind of hard not to give it to him.
Yeah,
there was a lot of
doubt about it. A lot of people who do the voting, John, as you well know, I think it was the 16-0 to put it top. If the Patriots had finished, I'd say 14-2.
It wouldn't have happened.
It would not have happened.
Right.
Because you always, more times than not, and I'm sure you do the same thing in any of the things you vote for. I vote for like the Maxwell Club Awards and so on.
Mm-hmm.
You vote based with coaches more than anything else. It's based on expectations. When you expect a team to be good, and they go from 12-4 to 14-2, you're not exactly probably throwing out a Coach of the Year award. But the fact that, you know, it wasn't that long ago that Green Bay was 8-8 and actually 4-8 with 4 games to go last year, got hot at the end of the year, finished 13-3, 5-game improvement. Mike McCarthy was obviously a strong candidate for that award as well.
Right. Well, shall we take a look at the wild card games this weekend?
Yes, we shall.
Okay.
It should be interesting because got plot, as usual, you have plot lines in all 4 of them.
Absolutely. Let's start off in chronological order. So we'll go with the 4:30 Eastern Time game on Saturday, which is the NFC wildcard matchup, Washington playing at Seattle. Now, I have to admit, I was a little disappointed. I thought Dallas really laid down against Washington and allowed the Redskins into this tournament, which I found somewhat disgusting as an NFL old schooler because of the old Cowboy-Redskin rivalry thing. But at the same time, though, the way the Redskins are playing, who's to say if the Cowboys had played with all their guys that the Redskins still wouldn't have won that game?
Well, let's keep in mind when they played earlier in the year, took a couple of late defensive plays by the Cowboys to hold them off in Dallas, the 28-23 game. So.
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
You got to keep in mind, this rivalry, which was really dominated by Dallas just a few years ago, has really kind of swung to even the last few years, especially with Joe Gibbs being back in the fold and so on. So I don't think it was a total surprise. You know, it's really becoming hard, John, to gauge these end-of-the-season games because every coach plays it so differently. But if you're a Cowboys fan or a Cowboys observer, I mean, you've seen a team that really has not played, and we'll talk about Dallas next week, obviously, but ever since beating the Packers that Thursday night, they've kind of not looked like the same football team for four games in a row,
well,
regardless of circumstances.
That's true, and of course, a lot of the same people are saying the same things about the Patriots. Since the Buffalo game, they haven't been the same team.
Well, I think that the Patriots, I think, is more been a sense of other factors. Dallas looks a little different, and I don't know if it's demeanor or attitude or being flat. The Patriots have looked anything but flat. I think the Patriots have had teams who have come up with good defenses. I think weather has certainly been a factor in some of the way they've played their games. And the bottom line is they still managed to win all of them. So I look at Dallas and New England kind of two different ways. Dallas looks like faulty execution, whereas New England looks like they now have the big target on their back and people are playing them even harder than they were earlier in the year.
Okay. Okay. I'll buy that to an extent. So do you give Washington any shot at Seattle?
Oh, of course I do. I mean, you got a coach here that knows how to win with different quarterbacks, different personnel, et cetera. They got a lot of momentum. Very much like people forget 2 years ago when the Redskins got in the playoffs, John, they were a 5-6 football team, had to win their last five games to get in.
That's
then
true.
Went into Tampa Bay, knocked off the Bucs. And in fact, the last time these two teams played was in the playoffs 2 years ago. And remember, Sean Alexander got hurt early in that game, but Seattle managed to win. Eventually wound up in the Super Bowl against Pittsburgh. That being said, I do like the Seahawks here. I think they just have a lot of offensive balance. And that doesn't mean necessarily Sean Alexander, who they're trying to get back into the mix. But even though they laid an egg, not last week, a couple weeks ago they laid an egg at Carolina, which was kind of a disturbing loss for Seattle because they had a lot of momentum going. And Washington is playing well. I think Seattle has an easier time putting points on the board and will find different ways to put points on the board to outscore the Redskins.
Interesting. Interesting. I apologize for being somewhat distracted there, but my computer is playing videos that I did not order, so sorry.
Oh, I think those are the ones I sent to you, so.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, my God. I'm wondering what the hell's popping up next here. Oh, look, it's Trey Wingo.
Well, at least I know what site you're on, so. Boy, I hope
what
I know
other site would I be on when talking to you, you know?
Boy, I hope I know what site you're on.
Exactly.
I have to go talk to Trey.
All right. Well, let's go then to the second game on Saturday. The 8 o'clock Eastern time game Saturday night will be the first AFC wildcard matchup. And this is the one I know that a lot of people are really looking forward to. Jacksonville at Pittsburgh. And the big story here is, can Jacksonville repeat what they did just a few short weeks ago?
Well, yeah, I think they're certainly capable. But I think weather's going to be a factor here. And funny enough, I think better weather actually favors the Steelers. It's hard to believe we're saying that. But, you know, you're talking about a power football team in Jacksonville and what has become more of a finesse team in Pittsburgh. Now, I will say without Willie Parker, while the Pittsburgh Steelers don't necessarily have the flash and dash in their running game, they probably have a guy who can more than make up for some limitations they have on their offensive line. And they are going to be playing with whoever it turns out to be a different left tackle, their third different left tackle this year. Max Starks had been replacing Marvell Smith, and now they're both out. There's been speculation that Alan Faneca could move from guard to tackle. He's actually done it before. But it'll be Trey Essex. He of four NFL starts from his rookie season and never a postseason start. But the bigger backs that Pittsburgh has will make up for some of that. Najee Davenport is more of a straight-ahead runner. Actually has a lot more big plays than people realize. But I think the difference here is the experience in quarterback. Even though he's laid some eggs, even and in the Super Bowl, Ben Roethlisberger is a 5-1 record in the playoffs. And it's not so much the record that I focus on; it's the experience of starting in the playoffs. He started 6 playoff games. David Garrard's only playoff experience was in a mop-up role at New England 2 years ago, when a lot of people felt he should have started that game. Instead of Byron Leftwich, it turned out to be a moot point because New England won with ease. But everybody's got Jacksonville as the team to do this and the team to do that, I'm going to actually say that they don't get past this first-round game and the Steelers pull out a squeaker.
You know, I was actually thinking the exact same thing, and I realized that the Steelers are walking wounded. They've got some real, you know, question areas now with the offensive line because of the injuries that they have. But just based on experience alone, and because of the fact that I'm sure Pittsburgh's still smarting for what Jacksonville a few weeks ago, I kind of like Pittsburgh at home in this one. And frankly, I know a lot of Patriots fans, Russell, look at this game on Saturday night as the winner is coming to New England because they give Tennessee very little shot.
Yeah, that seems to be the general consensus. You know, although we'll get to that game in a second, and I'm not saying that Tennessee's going to win, but I think it'll be a lot more interesting than people think. You know, Pittsburgh's a proud team. They have guys like Roethlisberger. They have a Super Bowl MVP in Hines Ward. They have enough savvy guys on that team, Alan Faneca, Polamalu, maybe have gotten a little tired of hearing about what happened to them a couple weeks ago where they got actually out-muscled in their own ballpark. And it's the only game at home they lost this year.
Right. That's absolutely right. 7-1 at home, and they get a chance to get a little bit of redemption Saturday night. All right, then Sunday's games. The 1 o'clock Eastern time game, the other NFC game, has the Giants playing at Tampa Bay. And I guess the larger question here is whether or not the Giants have anything left in the tank after what I thought was a superb performance this past Saturday.
Yeah, and you know what? I'll say this. If you picked one time in your brief history in the league to put a game on three different networks, boy, did you make a good choice.
Yeah, it was a really good choice. And I talked about this on yesterday's show, but I honestly was really impressed with the effort that the Giants put forward and the fact that they left their starters in there most of the way. I mean, they put real honest-to-God effort into it, and I was really happy with that. And I'm sure the Patriots had to be pleased with being able to take the best punch that the Giants could deliver.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think, you know, contrary to what I've heard from other people, and I know the Giants got some starters banged up, there's no question about it, but I've seen too many times teams take the foot off the pedal at the end of the year, not execute. You know, the Giants, because of the way they have played the second half of the season, the last 4 or 5 years, I think needed to do that. Tom Coughlin knows his team. I was impressed. It's almost it almost sounds funny saying you were impressed by their effort, but you have to say that in some ways because there were so many other teams that really went through the motions last week.
Right.
That being said, I just think the Giants are a better football team than Tampa Bay, who really kind of went through. I think Tampa Bay played the last month of the season very perplexing. They're a young and improved defense, but they've become more reliant on turnovers than they have in past years. I think the Giants have too much balance. I like their running game. And the Giants, funny little history thing, this will actually be the first time they played the Bucs in the playoffs, but it's the third time they played a postseason game in Tampa. Two of their three Super Bowls were played in Tampa, beating the Bills and losing to the Ravens.
Interesting.
I think they're going to be happier than the last time they played a postseason game. And I like the Giants to beat the Bucs in Tampa.
Yeah, I do too. I think the Giants have some definitive momentum, even in defeat from this past Saturday. I think they have to feel a lot better about themselves as a team, and I know a lot of people have to feel better about Eli Manning because he was darn near perfect.
Well, he played very well. You know, I think they changed some things at the end of the game when Sean O'Hara, the center, went out. They seemed they went less shotgun. Brandon Jacobs is a load. He's running with a lot of confidence. You know, Tom Coughlin, even though the injuries, always comes up with a pretty good offensive line. And I just like the way that they – every time we expected the Giants to fall on their face – and don't get me – you know, don't get me wrong. They're an erratic football team. So they have been. You know, just when we – you know, they beat the Bears, they lose to the Redskins, although the Redskins, as it turned out, and the Vikings – and these teams they lost to in the second half of the year had a lot to play for and either made the playoffs or almost made the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot to be said for that. They actually wind up maybe losing to teams that were better than we thought they were. But that being said, I just think maybe the third time is the charm for Eli and the Coughlin regime. You know, the last time the Giants were in the playoffs three straight years, 84 through 86 when Parcells was there, and that third time culminating in the Super Bowl win. So,
right.
It used to be the Giants were a somewhat playoff staple. They haven't necessarily been. They've been a staple losing the last couple of years, and I think they'd be ecstatic if they could finally beat Jeff Garcia in a playoff game.
Yeah,
they lost
like
to him when he was with the Niners in 2002,
right,
and where they blew a 24-point lead.
Right.
They lost to him last year when he was the Eagles quarterback in Philadelphia on a field goal in the last play of the game. Maybe it's their time to get Jeff Garcia at last.
Well, let's not forget the Giants were 7-1 on the road this year, so they were
and
much better
straight
road team than they were, right?
Yep, 7 straight.
Okay, and then the final wild card game will come up on Sunday afternoon, a 4:30 Eastern time kickoff. And we have to wait until this point in time before we'll ultimately learn who the Patriots will play, because Tennessee is the sixth seed in the AFC, and should they pull the upset at San Diego, then Tennessee will be coming to New England on the 12th, although not too many people give them a chance in this one. Do you?
Well, I give them a chance because of their coach and their defense and so on. And I also give them a chance because are we 100% sure of the mental makeup of this San Diego Chargers team? Now, I don't want to go back as far as 95, but, you know, the facts are the facts. But I'll keep it recent.
Mm-hmm.
This is a team that lost a wild card game at home to the Jets 3 years ago. And this was a team that, being the number one seed in the league last year, lost at home to the Patriots in the playoffs last year.
Mm-hmm.
So the LaDainian Tomlinson version of the Chargers, like Eli Manning's Giants, are 0-2 in the playoffs. And, you know, they've changed the coach. Let's see if they change the result. When these teams played 4 weeks ago, you know, you want to talk about a steel cage match.
Yeah.
And people forget that Tennessee had a 17-3 lead in that game.
Yes, they did.
Squandered it in the fourth quarter and eventually lost in overtime.
Right.
The thing I'm going to be looking at this game is the middle of both lines, John. You've got a couple of guys who have been to Pro Bowls and centers, Nick Hardwick, Kevin Mawai, veterans, you know, more so Mawai is the veteran. And you got two guys who are going to the Pro Bowl this year as defensive tackles. Albert Haynesworth, clearly a defensive rookie of the year, and maybe, just maybe, the Titans' most valuable player
mm-hmm.
this year. And, of course, Jamal Williams, who's become kind of a staple in the Pro Bowl. Good run stoppers. Like I said, when these teams played earlier in the year, there was hard-hitting and there was a lot of chippiness. Accusations of bounties, you know, cats and women, you know, cats and dogs living together, mass hysteria, the whole bit. I don't think this one will be any different. I'm going to go with the Chargers because I finally think they get over the hump. But it'll be also interesting to see what Vince Young does in this game.
Right.
His forte is mobility.
Mm-hmm. It'll
be interesting to see how mobile he is. The good news is you get to throw a quarterback in there in reserve role that's been to two championship games and one Super Bowl in Kerry Collins. He's clearly the better passer, not necessarily the better quarterback at this stage. He's a different kind of quarterback. And San Diego, at times, can be burned by the big play. Kerry Collins is never afraid to chuck it. I'm going to go with San Diego. But I think this will be, just because San Diego's had a tough time, and they haven't won a postseason game, by the way, since beating the Steelers in the 94 AFC title game.
Correct.
They've actually lost four in a row.
That's right.
It'll be very interesting to see San Diego's mindset in this game, given the fact that, just like last year, winning 10 in a row, they were hot, lost at home. This year they come in winning 6 in a row, playing better than earlier in the year. Let's see if they can finally get over that hump.
That's right. All right, so based on what we've talked about here and who you like in these games, it seems to me that you believe that Pittsburgh will ultimately be in New England.
Yes, I do. I believe, now, didn't Anthony Smith say something? I wouldn't be surprised if I see that team again.
Yep, he did.
I'm strictly going it on him. I think he was right all along.
Nice of you
to
have
pick
confidence
on the young man
in him,
and so on. But, I think we'll see. We'll certainly see the rematch there. And then San Diego and Indian, which was arguably the weirdest game of the year,
which
Peyton Manning throws 6 interceptions. The Colts get a bad break on an interception in the end zone that gets returned 100 yards, which didn't count because they blew a whistle. And of all people to miss a field goal chip shot at the end, it's Adam Vinatieri. But the loss is a loss. So we get two rematches from the regular season, I think, in the AFC. In the NFC, and I know I'm kind of holding form and so on, it would be Dallas facing the Giants
mm-hmm.
and Green Bay and Seattle. So it would be Mike Holmgren again.
Right.
And he has faced the Packers before in the playoffs.
Right.
The Giants in Dallas, which would be in some ways a little bit of a nightmare for the Giants, who in the two games they played Dallas this year, the defense got two sacks and they gave up eight touchdown passes. So they got to do a better job getting to Tony Romo this time. That being said, go the other way on the other four those games. So
wow.
Those are my picks, and I'll stick them to them.
All right, very good. Always great to talk to you. I will look forward to going over the divisional round matchups next week. How's that sound?
Absolutely, and I already have all the home teams figured out for next week. So
all the home teams already
did all
figured
the,
out?
I did all the – I even know when they're playing.
Really?
I did a lot of advanced work.
Well, it sounds like you do.
Yeah.
And imagine you wanna,
it's
let
amazing
us in
what
on?
You get in your email these days. So.
Oh, that's true. I do see that quite a bit. Anything you can let us in on?
I'm kidding around, but we already know. We know the early game on Saturday is Green Bay.
Right.
And then New England will play the Saturday night game.
Saturday night game, correct.
And then Indy is the early game Sunday,
mm-hmm.
and Dallas is the late game on Sunday. So
there we go.
I just figured out, me and you know that. Maybe not everybody else does.
Well, it's always good, though,
see, when you're
because
smart,
we do like
I'll
to give information
like
out here. So it's always
you're
good to reinforce track. What we know.
There you go.
Great stuff, Russell.
You too, John.
Good to visit
talk
with
to you
again.
Next week.
Yep, you got it. Russell Baxter, ESPN
research coordinator for ESPN for NFL research coordinator for ESPN, joining us here inside the playbook again. All right, let's couple of other emails that I wanted to read real quickly, and then we've got a lot of great stuff from inside the Patriots locker room to wrap up the program for you today, because the guys have been off for the last couple of days, as I'm sure that you are aware, and so they returned to the locker room to begin workouts again and practicing for the as-yet-to-be-named opponent in the divisional round of the playoffs in Foxborough coming up on Saturday night, January the 12th. But in the locker room today, Lawrence Maroney, Junior Seau, Marshall Faulk, Richard Seymour, Wes Welker, Rodney Harrison, and Ellis Hobbs were all available for interviews. And so our intrepid man, Dan, otherwise known as Mini Gary, was able to get into the locker room today. Sorry about that, Dan. You know, I realize the PFW guys like to, you know, bat you around a little bit. We treat you with a little more respect on this program. I hope you like that.
That's why I like you, John.
Okay, I thought so. That's plus the fact Gary's already, you know, booked out on an interview and some kind of a meeting today, right? Left you holding the bag today?
That's it.
You're a trooper. You're a real trooper. So we've got those interviews to play for you today, because I'm sure you want to hear from the guys as they talk about their playoff preparations here. Really quickly here, a couple of extra emails I'm going to share. One comes from, where are we here? Oh, this is Joe in Winnipeg, Manitoba, who's been a frequent contributor to the show. And I liked how he has basically asked here, for us to pick one, and he's given us three topics and which one we think is, I guess, more relevant. So he says, what's more impressive? What's the most impressive record this year by the Patriots? Brady's passing touchdowns or Moss's receiving touchdowns? And I think simply from sheer numbers alone, I'll take Brady's passing touchdowns. But I'm not sure that I really thought anybody would ever break Jerry Rice's record of 22. So that does nothing to discredit what Randy Moss did. It's just the number 50 just kind of stands out there. He says, Patriots' weakest link, Stephen Neal or Ellis Hobbs? Well, this is going to suggest, whichever player I pick here, this is going to suggest that, indeed, this person is a weak link. I don't mean this to be the case, but if you're comparing these two players side by side, I'd have to say Ellis Hobbs, and it's probably only because Hobbs has balls thrown to him, whereas I don't really think Neal is all that much of a weak link on the offensive line, because the entire line has to operate as a unit, and they've done a pretty good job overall this year. So I would pick Hobbs there, but I also think Hobbs is still a pretty good player. Most progress throughout the season, Brandon Merriweather, Chris Hansen, Jabbar Gaffney. Ooh, that's a good one. I'd say Chris Hansen. I think his average has been fairly steady, but early in the year it was kind of like, wow, you know, we finally found a weak link in our game. It's the kicking game. And then I'd say late in the year I thought he did a pretty effective job of field position and booming out a couple of tough ones when he needed to. So even though we saw, you know, Jabbar Gaffney step up and have a couple of big games and Brandon Merriweather get a lot get additional playing time late in the year, I'll vote for Hansen there. Biggest step backwards. Says Benjamin Watson, Dante Stallworth, Lawrence Maroney. Well, step backwards also indicates to me negative performance, and I'm not necessarily sure it's negative. But I'll say in this particular instance, Watson, and only because Watson has spent a lot of time hurt, and, of course, the drop balls I think we saw against the Giants last Saturday didn't help him. Team you least and most want to play next week, Steelers, Jags, Titans, Chargers. The team I least want to play. Well, we know it won't be the Chargers, so it's kind of hard to include him in there. I would say least want to play the Jaguars, most want to play the Titans. And then there you go. So he says, keep up the great work in 08, Joe in Winnipeg, Manitoba. Joe, thanks for sharing that. Really appreciate the you're sending the email and sharing that with us. Let's get you off into the locker room now and let you hear from the players themselves as they prepare for the divisional round of the playoffs, even though we don't know yet who the opponent will be. Once again, you've got Lawrence Maroney, Junior Seau, you've got Kevin Falk, Richard Seymour, Wes Welker, Rodney Harrison, and Ellis Hobbs all at the microphone. We'll be back with a full blast of Patriots playbooks for you next week. Of course, it'll be preview week for the AFC divisional round of the playoffs. And so we'll have you back here same patch time, same patch channel on Patriots.com radio.
Lawrence Maroney.
Something to you that as they came down the stretch here that they employed you more in goal line and in short yardage situations, that they gave you the ball in those situations?
It felt good to know that they trust and believe in me. I was able to give me the ball down in the red zone. I knew I had to make every chance count. So, you know, I did feel good about myself.
Why is this weekend different considering you don't have an opponent to get ready for?
It's kind of tough because you're preparing for who? You know, you're practicing, you're preparing, but you don't know who you're preparing for. So, it's, you know, you still want to practice hard and try to get stay in tune and don't get out of shape and don't lose, you know, don't go off beat. But you really don't know who you're preparing for. So it is a kind of rough one, but, you know, we still going to go out there and practice hard.
How about this game this weekend? Where will you watch it? Will you watch it?
Almost definitely, I will watch it. I'm going to probably watch it at my house, but I will watch it, you know, just to try to see and figure out who we might play.
Hey, Lawrence, is one of the things that Bill addressed with you guys is that basically 16-0 doesn't even exist now?
It don't, because we all on the same level right now. We all in the playoffs. There's 11 other teams. They all have to be good to make it here. So, you know, we all start off on the same level. We all 0-0, so, you know, every game counts.
Not only for yourself, Lawrence, but for the team, how important is the running game and getting it going the way you guys did last
week? I think we're going to need the running game in the playoffs to balance things. I don't think we're going to try to come in and overdo the run or overdo the pass. I think we're going to need both of them to come in and play and produce very well.
Do you think there's more pressure on you guys at all this postseason considering that you went 16-0?
I don't think it's no pressure. You know, we're just going to play Patriots football and just play our game.
But, you know, I mean, you're expected to win the Super Bowl.
Everybody has their own expectations. You know, we just expect to play good and just play our game, and that's all we can worry about.
Lawrence, this week, a chance you mentioned it's hard to prepare for a team. Is it a good opportunity to improve the New England Patriots, work on some things?
That's basically what we're doing, is getting ourselves better and focusing on what we can do to get better for the playoffs.
Because it's similar to the bye week during the season where maybe it's a lot of self-scout and stuff like that.
You can say that.
Do you guys think about trying to be the best team in the history of the football?
No, we just worry about, you know, just playing hard, playing 60 minutes, and giving it our best shot.
Anybody going to be rooting for on Monday night, LSU and Ohio State?
You know, I'm a Big Ten fan, so you know I got to root for the Big Ten.
Well, in this locker room, there's a lot more LSU guys than Ohio State.
Hey, but there's a lot of Big Ten players in here, too.
Junior Seau.
Do you learn anything from that? When you watch a game on TV, can you learn something from that, or you have to break down the film to really get anything?
All we're trying to do is just learn about ourselves. You know, we have a bye week. We're going to try to get healthy, work on the things that we need to work on, and obviously everything else will pan out. You know, it'll fix itself.
A couple of these teams that are playing this weekend that you could play, the teams you've played before, does that help you at all if you see a team for the second time around?
Every day brings on a different challenge. You know, there's never a same team coming with the same attitude. What we have to do is make sure that we take care of what we need to take care of one day at a time.
Junior, is it weird almost like you've gone through a regular season and now all of a sudden regular season, what you accomplished, doesn't even exist anymore?
It shouldn't, because it doesn't. It doesn't exist. I mean, what we did in the past last year is now gone. It's history. And, you know, what we have to do is go out and perform and do the things that we need to do to better ourselves so we can position ourselves, you know, when the day time, the day of the game comes. And then obviously go out and perform and execute.
Was it a much needed rest in a couple days?
We're still resting. Well, we are definitely still resting. It was a happy new year. Now we put everything away. And, you know, a lot of the things that happened last year really hasn't sunk in. And, you know, because of that, you know, what you have to do is just keep on pressing. Every day, keep on pressing and getting everyone on the same page and with the same purpose.
Is a healthy year change, calendar change, you can say, okay, that's 2007, different year. Or is it just the playoffs that year that are...
No, it definitely is a different year. It's a different year and a different week and different day and different challenge. And if we're able to maintain what we did last year, obviously it's going to help us. But there aren't any guarantees. You know, if we're able to do what we need to do next week, then we afford ourselves another week of employment. That's it. And there's nothing guaranteed to us. All right? I got it.
Kevin Falk.
And I want to ask you about Monday night.
What about Monday night?
LSU Ohio State.
What you want to know? Who I'm going for?
I want to know what's going on with Grable. He's outnumbered in this locker room, isn't he?
I don't know about any other guys from LSU, but I know I haven't been discussing the game or anything. So I don't know about the other guys, but me personally, I haven't been discussing the game.
You guys coming after him?
You never know. It all depends. It all depends on the outcome.
How about this? You've been through this before. This week, is it a different kind of football? You know, not knowing who your opponent's going to be. Is it an important time to work on yourself?
Well, it's an important time to work on things that you haven't done well during the course of the regular season. And that's one of the important things about this week.
You know, Belichick, he's got a list of things.
Of course, you know that already. You know, you come in, you're having a couple of days off, you're resting, you're just trying to think in your mind of the things that he, you know, he might bring up so you can, you know, have a heads up on what you need to work on and everything.
Can you ever figure that out in advance, what he's going to hit you with?
Never. Never. It's just a case of doing it, man. That's it.
Kevin, how good is it for this group of running backs that you have in here to really have gotten the running game going over the last 3 weeks going into the postseason?
Well, it's good for, you know, anything, you know, when you get your running game going a little bit and everything. But at the same time, you just got to be consistent. You know, 2 weeks out of the year ain't going to make it for you. 3 weeks out of the year ain't going to make it for you. You got to be consistent. And, you know, we just got to keep working at it. And that's what, you know, like a week like this week is for, you know, for us to just keep working at it.
Can you guys consider the season a success if you don't go all the way? I mean, you've gone all the way 3 times in your career, so really that's the goal.
When you set your goals in the beginning of the season, whatever happened that happened at the beginning of the season happened. That's not your goal. Your goal was something else, and it was bigger than that. So you got to, no matter how you finish the season, you even got to shoot yourself higher to make those goals that you made at the beginning of the season.
Because there's so many veterans in this locker room, is it easier to do that, to kind of put this historic season behind you and focus on the playoffs and what needs to be done?
I think it's easy for us as veterans to say, yeah, we can do that. But at the same time, I give a lot of credit to our coaching staff for preparing us, you know, letting us know exactly what's at stake, knowing what we have to do in order to win the game. Forget all the statistics and everything. Just know what we have to do to win the game.
Is there more pressure to win the Super Bowl because you guys went 16-0?
Pressure is what you put on yourself. That's how I look at it. If you want to put that pressure on yourself, that's you. But at the same time, we're going out to try to win a football game. That's it.
Kevin, what do you tell a younger player who maybe hasn't been through this before, who hasn't been through the postseason, a younger player, rookie, about the difference in the level of football?
You know, everybody knows that the intensity level picks up a little bit, and you ask yourself how and why. But at the same time, when you step on the field, you know the increase of intensity from the guys on the field. But at the same time, it's just keep working hard, and if you really want to make yourself better for your teammates, work harder than you did during the regular season.
When it comes to on field, is it comparable at all to the difference between preseason and regular season?
Not really. You know, it's just the fact of you knowing, you know, what's at stake during those times.
How helpful is it to have these three that you come back with a fresh attitude, rest up a little? Is it you feel like, you know, kind of reinvigorated?
If you took advantage of it, yes. You know, you can come back and you feel rejuvenated and everything. But if you went out and did crazy things, you know, you're gonna be playing catch up.
Richard Seymour.
Happy New Year to all the fans.
How strange is it, the sense that last week you accomplished a 16-0 season, this week it's like it didn't even exist?
Well, What we did, you know, during the season was great, and you know, it was a heck of an accomplishment, and you know, it was good that we did that. You know, I think it's something that the fans can enjoy. You know, it's something that we can look back, you know, once we walk away from this game and, you know, look at what we've done. But right now, you know, we still have a lot of work to do. You know, it's a new season. You know, everyone is 0-0, you know. It's just I look at it just like the draft. You know, you have first-round draft picks and you have seven-round draft picks. You know, but now you draft it. So, you know, it's what you do from this point forward. And, you know, so, you know, we have a lot of work to do. We don't know who we're going to be playing at this point. But, you know, we're excited to be playing, just to be playing. So, you know, we just have to see what happens.
Rich, is it hard to prepare not knowing who you're playing?
No, I think we, you know, we take this week and kind of, you know, look at ourselves, dissect ourselves, and get better in a few areas that we need to, whether it's the running game or running the football or stopping the run, you know, in our pass defense. So I think this is a time for us to look at ourselves and, you know, take care of our own business and get ourselves better. You know, obviously, we're definitely going to need it.
Rich, you have so many veterans on this team that have been to Super Bowls, won Super Bowls. Does that help mm-hmm. you in putting this season behind you and focusing on what needs to be done?
Well, you know what? I think all season long we've always done a good job of just taking it one game at a time and, you know, really not looking looking forward or not looking at the things that we've accomplished. And, you know, as cliche as it is, but if you never get too high or you never get down in the dumps when, you know, we could have been down in the dumps, even though we won some games but didn't play as well as we would like. You know, I just think now is a great opportunity for us just to, you know, keep that same mentality. And, you know, it's an exciting time of year. I mean, you know, this is one of the reasons that you play this game, you know, to have an opportunity. And that's what we have in front of us right now is an opportunity to do some great things, and we're definitely excited to do it.
How different was this year?
You know, what we've done, I mean, that's during the season. You know, right now we look at it as a totally different year because it is a different year. So, you know, I don't feel pressure to go out and perform or, you know, to keep a standard or a level. You know, we just go out and take care of our responsibility and do our job, you know, because when you play, we have a lot of guys that played in, obviously, in a lot of big games and, you know, won Super Bowls before. But, you know, each year is different. It brings on different challenges. You know, you also have different teammates and, you know, but it's a fun time of year. So I think some people crack under it and some people embrace it, you know. And we have definitely have a lot of guys that have embraced that, just love to be in the spotlight and love to be playing for a championship.
Last game of the season, defense is up 35 points. Are you concerned mm-hmm. about that at all heading into the playoffs? Teams need to tighten up on the defense?
Well, obviously, you know, we want to do a better job defensively. And, you know, we went into that football game, you know, having a good game plan and, you know, tried to execute. But I think you have to look at it and give the Giants a lot of credit. They did a lot of good things. And that's why I think we can take this week and, you know, look at the film and see what we need to get better at. Because obviously, you know, we're not perfect and we're not trying to go out and play perfect. You know, we're just trying to go out and do our jobs and, you know, try to play great. And you're going to have some games where it goes that way. Hopefully we you know, have any coming up soon.
Richard, if you're talking to a younger player, maybe someone who hasn't been through a full season of football before that whole experience, what do you tell them about the difference in the level of competition?
You know, we definitely look at it as just like the preseason when you go into that first game, it goes up a notch. And I thought it was really good to have that giant game because it was definitely a playoffs atmosphere. And it was definitely good for this football team, good for the young guys to see the type of intensity, see the environment that we're going to be up against week in and week out. So, I thought it was a good game for us, you know, just from that standpoint. But the stakes are high, and I think this is when you need your best players to play the best, and then you also need your solid players to play good. So that's kind of where it is right now.
How difficult was this season for you personally, sitting out?
Obviously, you know, not being able to play early on in the year, you know, because of injuries, you know, it's tough, you know, because, you know, when you see your guys out there playing, you want to be a part of it, you know, because that's one of the reasons that you, you know, play this game. But you have to be healthy in order to do that. And I wasn't healthy enough to play early on in the year. But, you know, I was it was a blessing that I was able to come back and, you know, get back out on the football field.
Wes Walker.
Excuse me. I'd say we're 0-0, you know. I mean, it's all clean slate from here, so we should make sure that, you know, we're hitting all cylinders and doing what we need to do.
First time heading into the postseason under this regime, what do you expect from practice this week? When Belichick talks about working on fundamentals, going back to basics, what do you think?
You know, it's an opportunity for us to get better, and that's what we're going to do. We're going to go out there and you know, try and improve on you know, where we're at now and move forward.
Well, this team's had some excellent performances in the fourth quarter. Do you feel like you've worn down opposing defenses in some of these games?
I don't know if we've worn down. You know, I think we've just kind of executed better as the game's gone on, and you know, that's what you got to do, and especially in those kind of situations, you got to make sure that you're hitting on all cylinders.
Talk about getting better. When you guys break down the minor problems that affects in between games, and what was the most significant difference? Did you see that game to game?
Yeah, absolutely. The coaches were quick to, you know, point all that stuff out and make sure that we're getting better at some of our deficiencies, and you know, we take a lot of pride in ourselves to make sure we're doing that.
Did the atmosphere of last week's game help you get ready for the playoffs?
You know, it's always a tough place to play, and especially under circumstances, but, you know, we just need to make sure that we're ready to go in all sorts of situations going forward.
Wes, the way you guys have been getting everybody's best shot and all the hoopla that's been around the team, in any way do you feel like you've been playing playoff games before this? Or with that intensity out on the field?
I don't think so. You know, I haven't been in a playoff game, so I really wouldn't know. So, you know, I can let you know after our first one.
Has anybody on the team tried to help you prepare for what a playoff atmosphere really is, or did they just say after the Giants game it's kind of like that?
No, I mean, you know, whatever it's going to be, it's going to be, and I just got to make sure I'm prepared and ready to go for it.
Is there any advantage, Wes, to if you guys end up playing a team that you played before, or is it more of an advantage to play a team that haven't played?
I don't think it's really an advantage either way. I think it's all about your preparation going into the week and, you know, make sure that we're hitting all cylinders going into it.
Ronnie Harrison.
Help having the of playing a team before already, or
I mean, you could probably say that, but at the end of the day, it comes down to, you know, how you perform and how you execute, and it doesn't matter who you're playing. If you're not executing or performing to the level you need to perform, then you'll be at home sitting on the couch watching the playoffs.
What does 16-0 mean?
Nothing. It doesn't mean anything.
When did you guys close the book on that?
I closed the book on it probably Tuesday morning. I mean, I enjoyed it Sunday and Monday and a little bit on Tuesday, and then after that, you call me, you get hung up on.
Rodney, it seemed like down the stretch, the last six or seven games, teams seem to have found ways to score on your defense. So why do you think that is?
I mean, this is NFL. They get paid, too. They get paid a lot of money just as well as we do. So we've played well. We've given up 10 points, 7 points. This past week, we gave up 35 points. We didn't execute the way we needed to, but at the end of the day, we got to win, and that's the only thing that matters.
Is there reason for concern at all?
I don't think it is. We're not panicking. We don't care what you guys think. You guys have no bearing on what the outcome of the game will be. We care about what's in this locker room and how we perform.
Roddy, you're starting to see the old Richard Seymour after he's returned.
What do you mean, old Richard Seymour?
I mean, after he's getting over his knee injury and getting back on the field, you're starting to see him.
Yeah, I mean, Richard's Richard. Richard, he says he feels good, and it's good to have him out there. I mean, no one likes to play hobble, and I've been through it, and it's not a good feeling. You can't really play the way you want to play, but Richard is Richard, and Richard, one of these team leaders, 5-time Pro Bowler guy, and the best in the league.
Freddie, I apologize if you answered this already, but Saturday the MVP comes out. Why should Tom Brady be the MVP of this league?
We don't care about that. We don't care. You know, whatever happens, happens. I mean, we have a lot of great players on this team, and individuals make great plays, but the teammates, he wouldn't have been, anyone wouldn't be able to do it without you know, their teammates, and that's what we focus on. We don't focus on individual accolades and things like that. If he wins it, he deserves it. If he doesn't, so what? Big deal.
A lot of talk heading into this sort of bye week and fixing us. What's the biggest significant difference you saw when there was little fixes in between some of those games, even those great wins during the season? How significant were those fixes?
Just, I mean, obviously it was very significant. If we improved our red zone defense this past week, we didn't play particularly well. But I think overall, I mean, we're doing a pretty good job. I mean, you know, I mean, you always have areas in the game where you can improve on and where you can get better. But for us, it's just defensively, it's just tackling better, communicating, executing, and just making plays. That's what the game comes down to.
Is it a little strange to say, you know, 16-0, it's best record ever, and it doesn't mean anything? It's kind of strange.
I mean, you have to, in what
you don't care, but everybody else saying it's the best record a team has ever had, and now you're.
We don't care. It doesn't matter. It just comes down to, you know, what happened in the past. You really have to just focus on the here and the now, and no one cares about 16-0. No one cares about what we've done. It's about what we're going to do. And if, like I said, we have to step up, and we have to make sure that we go out there and execute and do our job. We'll win. Probably be similar to last week. I mean, that was a playoff atmosphere. I've been in playoffs, many games, and the same type of atmosphere. I mean, very intense, very physical, very emotional, and that's the type of games you expect. This is why you live to play football, the playoff games, these big type of games. You don't live to, you know, to play in the small games. You want to really play in the big games, and big players make big plays.
Was there a point in the regular season where we started to feel like playoff games as the wind started to mount and everybody started talking about the undefeated season?
Well, I think since I've been here, each and every week that we play someone, we get the team's best. So it's always like a playoff atmosphere from other teams' intensity standpoint. They always bring their A game because they're playing against the Patriots. So as the wins increased and continued to mount, of course each game became even bigger and bigger, which, you know, a lot of help from you guys with that. But we remain with the same mindset, one game at a time, and not treating anyone any different than the other one.
Rodney, kind of a fun question. Which is the bigger train in Boston sports this year, Randy Moss or Kevin Garnett?
I don't know. I don't care. I mean, good to have both of those guys. Kevin's a beast and Randy's a beast, as well as Wes Welker and all other guys that we brought in. As well as our 53rd man, as well as our first man. Doesn't matter.
So trying to give a good game to have heading into the playoffs, given that it doesn't.
I think so. I think it would. I think it was. I think great way to really end the season with a team that, you know, really showed us a bunch of different things offensively as well as defensively. You know, we definitely had an area in special teams, which we gave up a long return touchdown. The playoff atmosphere, getting us really into that mindset, getting us into that feel of what the playoffs will be. And then being at home. I mean, it feels good to be at home. So I think the guys are going to be well prepared, well rested, and got to go out there and play.
Ellis Hobbs.
with how the
this last locker room does, you know.
It ain't me. I'm Iowa State, baby.
Tell us with how the last two seasons ended for you guys. You know, you had one of four Super Bowls the team had, then Denver and then Indy. I mean, are you guys, is this still the feeling still there? And are you hungrier now? You just don't want to go through that again.
How can you bring up something like that with the season we're having? And going into the playoffs, that's irrelevant, dude. That has nothing to do
with
the season.
Doesn't make you guys hungrier just to avoid that terrible feeling. That
no, it's not the same players. It's not the same team. It's not the same mentality. You know, it's two totally different years, even from my rookie year or whatever, you know. And it has nothing to do with this year, man. You don't think about that stuff and use it as a motivation. All the motivation we need is here in this locker room in the present, 2008.
Ellis, would you guys rather face a team that you've played before or face a team that, you know, you haven't played this season?
You know, that's a good question. You know, I mean, obviously, me personally, you know, if you know a team's tendencies and what they do and you played them before, obviously, it's to your advantage, to their advantage also. But I think it works both hands, where if you haven't played them, they haven't played you either. So, you know, it's a level playing field on that sense. The edge is gained throughout the week. Who can get the film work, who can find the tendencies, and who can execute their scheme the best against one another. So, Good.
You guys are all talking about being 0-0 and everyone's on even playing field.
You said it.
I mean, how easy is that to just switch into that mode after the season you have?
It's like nothing, baby. It's like transferring from 3 to 4, you know, gear 3 to 4. It's like we've been doing it from the beginning, you know. Every game is like 1-0. So before you become 1-0, what are you? 0-0. So it's like this is just a smooth transition into it. Like I said, understanding that this is the playoffs and that it counts and that this is it, that mentality is there as far as do or die situation now. But just play the game as if it's your last, and everything will be fine. That's what we've been doing.
Do